Taking Stock on News Talk.
Thanks to Skillnet Ireland, driving business success through innovative training and upskilling.
We're joined now by Brad Stone, Senior Executive Editor for Technology at Bloomberg News and the author of Amazon Unbound, Jeff Bezos and the Invention of a Global Empire. Brad, you're very welcome. Thank you for joining us.
Thank you, Gavin.
If you look through the list of the world's richest people, it's striking that a lot of them come from wealth. Warren Buffett and Elon Musk could be two that stand out. Jeff Bezos, though, most certainly did not come from a wealthy background.
Oh, no. He was born to a single mother in Albuquerque, New Mexico. Her family was relatively well off, or maybe middle class, but they moved around quite a bit when Jeff Bezos was young. He attended high school in the Miami area. His father ended up working for Exxon, was a petroleum engineer. But that fortune is all self-made. That is the result of Jeff Bezos' ownership stake in a little tiny company called Amazon, which he founded in 1994, which then grew up into the juggernaut we know today.
Yeah, and you know, reading the detail about him is clear. He was something of a prodigy as a child, and he has this idea, as you mentioned, to start up this online retailer, starting out with books, which becomes Amazon. So it's one thing, Brad, to have this idea, but what was it about him that made him execute it well? Because executing it is a different kettle of fish.
That's right. Oh boy. I mean, he's a visionary, right? He saw the potential of the internet to deliver, what I call the everything store, a store with kind of limitless selection. He had incredibly high standards and that kind of stubbornness and impatience that we sometimes, attribute with, difficult CEOs, very intimidating, challenging employees, inspiring them and maybe motivating them with a little bit of fear to move quickly and to work around the clock. And look, Amazon has gone through periods in its history where, the stock price was down, employees left, and Bezos was always a believer, and he kept coming up with new things. So the cloud business, AWS, or the Kindle, or, in this book, I tell the story of Alexa, which basically Jeff invents, he has the idea for. And so it's that combination of, being an inventor, but also able to manage a company as big as Amazon and keep employees all marching in lockstep in the right direction.
The cloud computing thing is really interesting, and it's a pretty chunky part of the business now. How did that come about?
So that's about 2004, 2005, and Bezos is reading a lot of books on the history of electricity, and there's a transition in history where companies and even people's homes, they have generators on their premises, and then they go and start getting power from the electric company. And he believes that a similar transition will take place with computers, that instead of having servers in the back room, you will basically get computing power like you get electricity over a grid. And he believes that Amazon, because it is one of the single biggest users of computing power and data centers in the world at this point, that Amazon, even though it's a retailer, can be in the position to do it. And again, it's one of these things where he gets into the details and conceives some of the early services, and then he hands it off to his chief deputy, a guy named Andy Jassy, who runs it ever since. And now Andy Jassy is about to take over as CEO of the whole company as Bezos retires.
Bezos, he's been criticized for not being as much of a philanthropist as maybe he should be for a guy with a fortune of this size. For example, a lot of the world's wealthiest people are signed up to something called the Giving Pledge, which is a commitment to give the majority of their wealth away. He's not signed up to that, Brad.
No, and in a very Bezos-like way, he kind of just always declines to go along with the crowd. He wants to do his own thing, and we saw that with Amazon's kind of climate commitments. Instead of just releasing a carbon impact report, he had to come up with something called the Climate Pledge and get other companies to sign his thing. He's a little headstrong in that way. But you're right in that with the philanthropy. He's got a $200 billion fortune. He's the wealthiest person in the world. And there have been calls on him to be more philanthropic. He was slow to do it. I think he's been responding to the criticism. He announced a $10 billion Bezos Earth Fund to make climate donations. And I want to be optimistic about that. I think, you know, one of the smartest people in the world trying to solve the problem of climate change is good news. But, you know, it's very early and, you know, he still kind of has to prove out that his intentions are real and that he'll follow through on it.
Another thing he gets criticized for is the company's treatment of workers. And there was an incident recently where I kind of wondered, is this guy a bit divorced from reality? If you just look at his last letter to shareholders, he's defending the company and he says, and I quote, "Employees are able to take informal breaks throughout their shifts to stretch, get water, use the restroom or talk to a manager, all without impacting their performance." And Brad, you left thinking reading that, hang on a second, this guy is saying people can go to the toilet and he's highlighting that as a plus point. What planet is he on, this guy?
Well, there may be a little bit of an empathy gene that you and I have and most normal people have that he maybe lacks, and which has allowed him to kind of build these systems and not always consider how the human caught in the middle of it is impacted or what the unintended consequences are. He's very analytical, right? He looks at things surely, you know, certainly in terms of like, you know, the system and the efficiency and not always the human impact. And then when he gets criticized for it, and we see it again and again in all sorts of different ways with Amazon's business, when he gets criticized for it and when the criticism starts to impact the business, then he applies his analytical mind to solving that problem. And so that's what we see now. Like, you know, the very legitimate criticism that the drivers who deliver packages for Amazon, you know, can't take a break to go to the bathroom, it sounds horrific. And now he's addressing it. And it's responding to criticism. It's not solving the problem to begin with. But again, you know, in some like very capitalist way, that is maybe what has allowed him to construct this empire that now dominates our world.
Something else that stands out in your book is that he's a bit of a gambler and he's willing to invest big in things. You write, for example, in 2011, he emailed several Amazon managers saying, "We should build a $20 device with its brains in the cloud that's completely controlled by your voice." And this, Brad, as you alluded to earlier, was the birth of Alexa.
Right. Right. He's a science fiction fan. He's a Star Trek fan. But he also is technically very technically proficient and understood back in 2010 that the future in tech was going to be deep learning and artificial intelligence. He felt like he had an advantage with AWS, Amazon's cloud service. And so there in that email to his senior executives, he's basically saying, let's use our cloud computing advantage and the nascent field of voice technology to build something totally new. Now, that's the idea. The follow-up was him micromanaging the heck out of the thing, meeting with the team every couple of days, investing tons of money in it, walking out of meetings when he felt like they weren't meeting his standards, and getting them to think inventively about how to collect all the data that you would need to make Alexa smart. So, you know, it's remarkable when you dig into some of these projects like Alexa that have been so significant. You trace it all back to Bezos himself and how closely he kind of drives these products inside Amazon.
Yeah, I mean, you mentioned some of his conduct there in meetings. I'm not sure he'd be the most pleasant fella to work for, this guy. Alexa, you know, is one of those things. I think when it came out first, people were kind of a bit bemused by it. But you can see now, you know, it's really taken off. What, though, Brad, would you say have been their biggest flops in terms of product? You know, I think that they've tried various things in China and India maybe that haven't worked.
Right. Well, I mean, certainly China might have been the most expensive blunder. They never quite figured it out there in terms of building a consumer business in China. Part of that might be the hostility of the Chinese government to allow Western companies to succeed there. But, you know, at the same time as they lost a lot of money, they never went as big or as boldly as, say, Alibaba did in China. And then in India, they've invested a lot of money. I wouldn't say that's been a failure. You know, the political environment is kind of hostile there. But, you know, they're right there alongside Walmart in building a business in India. And then back here in the West, you look at the Fire Phone, where they tried this expensive smartphone that was supposed to have a 3D screen and nobody really embraced it. And then they do all sorts of little things that kind of don't work. I have a really fun time in the book telling the story of something called the single cow burger, which is a hamburger made from just a single cow instead of hundreds of them, which is sort of unappetizing. And Bezos read about that in the Washington Post, ordered it up within Amazon, taste tested it, fussed about the packaging, had it come out as part of Amazon's grocery delivery service. And I don't know that that set the world on fire. But, it, you know, the thing about Amazon is they'll try a million different things. And if some of them work, they're okay with that.
Yeah, you mentioned the Washington Post there. He's got a couple of projects outside of Amazon, one being this commercial space travel project, but also he actually bought the Washington Post. Why do you think he bought the Washington Post?
You know, it's back in 2013. It's kind of circumstance. The Graham family is selling the paper. You know, Bezos feels like, you know, he can make a positive impact. He can apply his kind of leadership principles, his system for inventing new things in another way. You know, maybe he also saw that owning a paper would position him sort of favorably as a champion of journalism and an important American institution. You know, of course, it kind of backfired because for 4 years he had nothing but trouble from the Trump administration. But, you know, it certainly has burnished his image. Right. So if he was thinking about that, he was prescient. But in terms of like some people think, well, did he want access to political power? And that I don't see. You know, Amazon spends a lot of money on lobbying and probably does quite well all on its own in terms of manipulating the levers of power.
Now that he's leaving the chief executive gig to become executive chairman, what do you expect, Brad? Will he be doing other sort of non-Amazon projects, or do you think he'd still, you know, be pretty hands-on or what?
Right. Well, we talked about the Post and we talked about the philanthropy. The other big one is Blue Origin, his space company, which is really getting badly beaten by SpaceX and Elon Musk's company. So there's a little bit of dysfunction there. And I think he needs to go. He spends $1 billion a year or even more on Blue Origin. So that kind of needs his attention. And he says as executive chairman, he'll stay at Amazon and continue to work on new stuff. And then I also report in the book that he's building this super yacht. This magnificent three-mast schooner that'll be ready, you know, sometime later this year, early next. And this is the big transformation that I kind of chronicle in Amazon Unbound, where the tech nerd has become, you know, this willing member of elite society and, you know, seems to really enjoy his wealth. And that's not the Jeff Bezos that we all knew 10 years ago. And so I suspect that when he resigns as CEO, you know, we'll see him popping up at, you know, courtside at Wimbledon and in the high seas a lot more than he has been over the past few years.
You say it's not the Jeff Bezos we knew 10 years ago. What's changed?
I just think his eyes opened up to a larger world. He was very absorbed with Amazon, owning the Post, participating in business councils, fighting with Donald Trump, you know, getting divorced, you know, having a new girlfriend in Lauren Sanchez, who's very much a creature of Hollywood and high society, enjoying things like the yachting life. It's all changed. He's a different guy. The change has been visible in front of our eyes, right? The tech nerd has become the action star in a weird way. And, you know, maybe he's human, you know, the wealth maybe affected him a little bit. The attention affected him. And he became the wealthiest person in the world by virtue of his ownership stake in Amazon. So how can that not impact somebody?
Yeah, I think you're right there. Our guest here on News Talk is Brad Stone, Senior Executive Editor for Technology at Bloomberg News and the author of Amazon Unbound, Jeff Bezos and the Invention of a Global Empire. Brad, you mentioned his divorce there. That was kind of something that was splashed all over the newspapers, sort of the circumstances of that and his new relationship. Must have been very difficult for this guy.
Well, you know, let's go back to what I said about the empathy gene. And maybe there's a corollary that what is embarrassing for some people maybe wasn't that embarrassing to him. If you remember, he made that post on the website Medium where he basically called out the National Enquirer for extorting him. And and said that they had these compromising photos of him, and you know he didn't really seem to worry that much about how it might impact his reputation. And so I don't know if how embarrassing that was. It didn't seem to slow him down. And, you know, he kind of won that round because he ended up kind of embarrassing the Inquirer and some of his enemies in that battle. So I don't really know if he was embarrassed by that.
This is the follow-up to your 2013 bestseller, The Everything Store. And this time around, ultimately, Brad, you're asking, is the world better off with Amazon in it? So is it better off, Brad?
Well, you know, I here's where I kind of come out on that. Amazon is here to stay, right? It is a fact of life. We're never going to move into a world where the big tech companies don't exist. So, to, you know, the hypothetical is just that, right? And I can say that in my life, you know, I'm a Prime member. I'm an Alexa owner. I watch the TV shows and movies. And I think it would be hypocritical for me to say, you know, it's hurt my life. I mean, I feel like in a lot of ways, Amazon gives us back some time. It's efficient. I can't say that about all the big tech companies. So there are lots of reasons to criticize Amazon. I do that in Amazon Unbound. There's room for improvement in terms of its relationship with workers, the quality of work in the fulfillment centers, the chaos of the Amazon marketplace, and the quality of some of the products you buy on Amazon. But by and large, I feel like, you know, it probably has added to the global economy, restored some time, and you know, and then there's also plenty of room for governments to come in and take a hard look and figure out, well, you know, how do you restore some balance to the competitive field, because this company is kind of unstoppable and it's incredibly hard for smaller companies to compete with it.
Okay, we leave it there. Brad Stone is Senior Executive Editor for Technology at Bloomberg News and the author of Amazon Unbound, Jeff Bezos and the Invention of a Global Empire. Brad, thanks for being with us.
Thank you.
Taking Stock on News Talk.
Thanks to Skillnet Ireland, driving business success through innovative training and upskilling.